Radio is back. All right. Welcome back. I'm Uncle Dennis. And we're going to get into Forest Service news here next. In just 10 days, the Senate will vote on the Interior Appropriations Bill. And that doesn't include counting the Labor Day weekend. The vote is just 6 working days away. As of this writing, Senators Wyden and Murray of Oregon have not made a commitment to support the Brian Fitzgerald Amendment. The amendment would, for the first time, reduce funds for logging on the timber sales management line item and increase funds for fish, wildlife, and road maintenance and decommissioning. Passage of this amendment will send the message that priorities on our national forests need to change by shifting away from extraction and towards restoration. So if you live in Oregon, you need to, or Washington, you need to contact Senator Patty Murray of Washington. I guess that's a he or a she, excuse me, at 202-224-2621. That's 202-224-2621. Or, let's see, Senator Ron Wyden, a Democratic senator from Oregon. 202-224-5244. That's 202-224-5244. And I don't have phone numbers from other states, but it's just as important if you live somewhere else to get the Brian Fitzgerald Amendment through the Senate. So if you can help out by calling your senators, please do. Let's move into news from the states. North Carolina, a recent discovery of the endangered Indiana bats in the Nantahala National Forest and subsequent shutdown of logging in 4 western North Carolina counties has attracted a lot of media attention, most of it focusing on the disgruntled loggers who are temporarily out of work. Newspapers ran the story under the headline such as Endangered Bat Endangers Western North Carolina Logging. Television reports led with laid-off loggers complaining that the bat was forcing them out of the woods and denying them a paycheck. Compelling stuff, sure, but far from complete reporting. Lost in the simplistic portrayals of bats versus jobs is a far more complex story. The news media are allowing the timber industry to turn the Indiana bat into another spotted owl, a convenient and innocent scapegoat, while ignoring the underlying problem that caused this conflict in the first place, federally subsidized logging of public lands. Instead of blaming the bats, we should be thanking them for doing what Congress has failed to do so far, shutting down the U.S. Forest Service's timber program, a bureaucratic boondoggle that sells out endangered species, forest recreation, and watershed protection. For the sake of giving government handouts to the timber industry, I can't back that claim too long. Got some news here from Colorado. Apparently, the resort road into Vail is in the wrong spot. The nation's largest ski resort is up to its neck in legal troubles for carving a dirt logging road across a bog. That's all the news I have from Associated Press. Maybe we'll get some more stories out of Colorado on exactly what's going on, but that's the news. Vail's in trouble. Their road's through a bog. All right. Let's move to Montana. Defenders of Wildlife announced today that 15 imperiled swift foxes have been reintroduced into the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in northwestern Montana. The foxes are being returned to the region through a partnership between the Department of Wildlife, Defenders of Wildlife, and the Cochrane Ecological Institute and the Blackfeet Nation in hopes of restoring a self-sustaining population. This is the second swift fox release in this area since the summer of 1998, when 30 swift foxes were brought from Canada. The species was declared extinct in Montana in 1969. Quote, "It is a very encouraging to know that these small creatures will once again be a part of Montana's diverse natural heritage as they roam the prairies where they belong," unquote, said Defenders of Wildlife President Roger Schleckeisen. Schleckeisen, I still can't pronounce that name. Quote, "The recovery of rare species nationwide will depend on the innovative partnerships such as this. CEI, the world's only swift fox captive breeding facility, is providing the foxes. The Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife Department is providing the site and assisting with the release, and the Defenders of Wildlife coordinated the project and contributes funding through a grant from the Bradley Fund for the Environment of Sand County Foundation. The swift foxes have received a warm reception from the community on the Blackfeet Reservation." Blackfoot Wildlife Department Director Ira Newbrest says, "The people have adopted these animals as their own. When they see a swift fox, they feel special inside. like they've been handpicked to help bring a species back. From Maryland, two real estate development partnerships have been fined $1.86 million for illegally filling protected wetlands, the largest criminal fine ever imposed in a Clean Water Act case in Maryland. In August 26th plea agreement with federal prosecutors, Interstate General Corporation, IGC, a publicly traded partnership, agreed to pay a $1.5 million criminal settlement for filling wetlands in the Dorchester area of St. Charles, Maryland. The company will pay $1 million in cash and donate $500,000 in land for a wetlands restoration project ordered in the settlement. And the St. Charles Associates and IGC in a civil settlement will pay an additional $360,000 penalty for filling two other areas in St. Charles and restore or create about 73 acres of wetlands. IGC has already restored about 10 acres of wetlands on two other parcels. Quote, today's criminal and civil settlement shows that we are protecting our ecologically vital wetlands seriously. Development over the last 200 years has nearly destroyed three-quarters of the original wetlands of Maryland, and Marylanders rightfully demand that we fairly and vigorously enforce the laws protecting the state's remaining wildlands, said U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Regional Administrator W. Michael McCabe. All right. Good news from Maryland. Moving to Oregon. That's right, our Freddy friends are at it again. This time, the Zigzag District of the Mount Hood National Forest wants to improve water quality and fish habitat by logging in the Salmon Huckleberry Wilderness. Gosh, I wonder how they can do that. Cut trees will be placed in Cheney Creek to generate pools and collect gravel. Most of these structures fail within a few years anyway, and a few trees placed in Cheney Creek within the wilderness will do little, if anything, to improve the channel's ability to respond to disturbances, reduce its sediment supply, or reduce the stream bank erosion potential. Bottom line, they shouldn't have the gall to suggest cutting in the Salmon Huckleberry Wilderness. Do they think we aren't monitoring restoration projects? Let's send them a clear message. We want restoration, but keep your saws away from the wilderness. Call David Saget at 622-3191, extension 637. That's David Saget, 622-3191, extension 637, and let him know that this kind of proposal won't fly. If you want to send written comments, request an environmental assessment from David and read page 10. Cheney Creek is a perennial stream that flows through the heart of the Salmon Huckleberry Wilderness in Oregon. It enters the Salmon River just outside the northeast corner of the wilderness boundary. In general, the restoration plan calls for promoting fish habitat and improving water quality by restoring riparian areas and controlling erosion. It is one of two stream restoration projects proposed in the Zigzag District this year. Moving to Washington. Foresters and biologists who tested Washington State's new industry-designed legislation for protecting salmon streams, quote, found policies too complicated to work and protection for some species based on guesswork instead of science, says the Seattle Times. When an attempt was made to apply the legislation to the ground, quote, two different foresters came up with two different buffer zones with 60 feet of disputed territory in between, said the Times. Quote, I've been a forester for 16 years and I'm not comfortable with this, said Eric Wish of the State Department of Natural Resources. Quote, it's going to be almost impossible to explain and very difficult to implement on the ground. It just isn't going to work, and once trees are cut, you can't stand them back up, said John Edwards, former manager of forest practices for the Department of Natural Resources. The Washington law was passed to provide a statewide exemption of timber industry lands from take requirements under the Federal Endangered Species Act. The proposed habitat conservation plan is the most recent in a flood of HCPs that locking in devastating industrial forest practices on millions of acres of private lands in the West. Instead of rubber stamping Endangered Species Act and clean water exemptions called for in the flawed Washington state plan, the Clinton administration should develop strong new rules for protecting imperiled salmon runs. Boise Cascade is going to log contested spotted owl habitat. A federal judge is likely to lift an injunction prohibiting Boise Cascade from logging the company's last 50 acres of old growth on the northern Oregon coast range. The site had been protected due to its presence there of northern spotted owl, but now the owls have abandoned the site. The big trees are likely to fall. The situation highlights the importance of protecting ancient forests for all of their habitat values, not just spotted owls. The site had never been surveyed for marble murrelets, for example. Boise reportedly maintained ownership of the site when they sold the surrounding property because it wished to sue the government for regulatory takings. And more news about the Northwest Forest Plan. Federal Judge William Dwyer stopped 25 timber sales in Western Oregon and Northern California just a couple of days ago, after ruling 3 weeks ago that the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management had not followed the requirements of the Northwest Forest Plan. The ultimate fate of the stopped timber sales will likely be decided in October after further court hearings. The judge denied conservationists' request to stop one sale in Northern California. And a major consideration of the hearing was the economic impact on private mills of halting the 26 sales. Plaintiffs presented the judge with evidence that 90% of the timber harvest in Oregon and Washington does not come from federal land, but this from state and private land. Approximately 120 million board feet of timber was stopped by the court, which is about 1.5% of the 8.4 billion board feet of timber harvested from all ownerships in Oregon and Washington in 1997. Further, most mills have diversified their log supplies so that few really rely solely on federal timber anymore. The Asian economic recession has also reduced log exports and consequently increased the availability of logs on the domestic market. The bottom line is, the timber industry can't survive without destroying the last of our ancient forests and wildernesses, said Doug Hyken of the Oregon Natural Resources Council. It's time for everyone to recognize that the highest and best use of our public forest is as fish and wildlife refuges, drinking water filters, air purifiers, soil protectors, recreation sites, scenic vistas, pharmaceutical storehouses, sources of inspiration, and the crucibles of evolution. Boy, I like that. That's pretty highfalutin stuff. All right. And in California, as the end of the legislative session approaches here in California, the year's big deals are beginning to take shape in Sacramento's back rooms. One of these deals involves the proposal to allow Pacific Gas and Electric to sell all of its holdings to an unregulated, wholly owned subsidiary without any environmental review. While this is not usually an issue that EPIC follows closely, this deal would have a tremendous impact on efforts to recover salmon and water quality throughout the state. The following Sierra Club alert and attached LA Times editorials contain further information. Action alert. Basically all the same information. Please call Senator John Burton or Assemblyman Antonio Villaraigosa today. And here's some phone numbers. Tell them to defer any decisions about the hydropower transfer until January so that stakeholders in the state can fully study options that will best protect California's fisheries and water quality. Here's the number, John Burton, Senator John Burton, 916-445-1412. That's Senator John Burton, 916-445-1412. And Assemblyman Antonio Villaraigosa, 916-319-2045. 916-319-2045 for Assemblyman Antonio Villaraigosa. Stop PG&E in their tracks. All right, the LA Times writes, California has a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to revitalize hundreds of miles of rivers and streams so they can teem with migrating salmon. Thousands of acres of wildlands can be open to recreation, and the rural north, long tapped by the rest of California for its water, can keep enough of its precious supply to build economic growth. But this chance will be lost if the legislature succumbs to increasing pressure to allow Pacific Gas and Electric to turn over its unique hydropower generation systems, valued by PG&E at $3.3 billion, to be a wholly owned subsidiary. PG&E would reap a major tax windfall from this paper sale and free the hydro system from regulation by the State Public Utilities Commission. The firm would then sell its power to the lucrative free market created by electrical deregulation. And the whole thing is not subject to environmental impact reviews, and oh boy, sounds like a mess. So if you want further information, contact EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center, P.O. Box 397, Garberville, California, 95542. That's P.O. Box 397, Garberville, California, 95542. Or phone them at that old familiar number, 707-923-2931. That's 707-923-2931. Or EPIC at wildcalifornia.org. EPIC at wildcalifornia, all one word, .org, for more information on stopping PG&E. All right. Well, we're going to take a little break from the news here, give Uncle Dennis's voice a chance to recover. And we're going to play another of the tapes supplied to us by Oak. These are commentaries that Oak has recorded, especially for Earth First Radio. So take a listen here. I believe this one is called The Biocentric Heritage.
Most of the ecological ills we now confront on the doorstep of the 21st century have in common a human viewpoint that appears to run contradictory to what nature intended long ago when us two-leggeds first tread this earth. For all intents and purposes, humanity has forsaken many of its bonds with the planet and manufactured in their place an anthropocentric mindset and technology, both self-serving and self-defeating. In the words of environmental philosopher Holmes Ralston, there is something morally naive about living in a reference frame where one species takes itself as absolute and values everything else relative to its utility. Naive, yes, but what about selfish, stupid, and murderous? All these describe most of humanity's motives and actions with regard to what remains of the natural world around them. It was not always so. In fact, I venture to guess it is not so today among those still too young or too stubborn to have been indoctrinated into the human institution of ecological negligence. As a child, I recall countless hours spent observing the natural world and being caught up in its wonder. I do not recall differentiating between human and non-human in terms of value. All things seemed equally alive and vital. I have a notion that such is the outlook of most children, a sort of inherent biocentrism, until their parents or older siblings or schools or televisions tell them otherwise. Perhaps this loss of innocence, something which can almost be seen in the eyes of our children, is the real meaning of original sin. Whatever you may call it, we are not duty-bound to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Whatever you call it, one more time, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Whatever you may call it, we are not duty-bound to treat the rest of creation as something at our disposal. This is a learned trait, an unseemly, and in the end, self-defeating trait. I say this because our technology will not rescue us from destroying the ground beneath our feet. It cannot, because it is that very technology and the thoughts behind it that have brought us to the precarious point we are at today. It is that way of thinking and the results of it which will push us over the edge. Anyway, that's the view from this oak for Earth First Radio.
And we want to thank Oak for these wonderful commentaries that he's been supplying to us for quite a while now. And we got another one for next week called Up, Up, and Away, so stay tuned next week for more commentary from Oak. Let's move to Australia. In an attempt to secure Australia's contentious forest peace process, failed in the federal parliament today while tempers are erupting among native trees in Western Australia. Federal government legislation to entrench the Royal Regional Forests Agreement process has run afoul in the Australian Senate. A Labor opposition amendment to ensure either House of Parliament could disallow an RFA passed narrowly in the Senate with Green and Democratic support. Apparently these are like HCPs. Strongly opposed by conservation groups, the RFA process is designed to make a final declaration by both state and federal governments on which areas of the region in question will be logged and which reserved. The process was jolted recently by the Western Australian state government unilaterally modified its RFA under strong environmental pressure to phase out cutting of old-growth forests more quickly than the RFA signed in May provides. This led the Federal Forestry and Conservation Minister Wilson Tuckey to speak at timber workers' protest meetings against the conservationists. Tuckey represents Western Australia. Last weekend, after he toured the contentious area and spoke at a rally in Perth, two protesters' forest rescue camps were burned and wrecked. Angry timber workers warned shaken protesters Saturday to leave the southwest part of Western Australia or risk being bashed by night hit squads. Conservationists were terrorized by 40 armed loggers who ransacked and burned a bush camp at Wattle Block, 55 kilometers, about 34 miles south of Manjimup. That's what it says, Manjimup. The vigilante loggers wielded baseball bats, axes, and sledgehammers as they wrecked the camp and threatened to kill 8 protesters. Police sent reinforcements into Manjimup Wednesday to prevent further forest violence. Oh boy, things are heating up in Australia. There's a picture here at the back page of a person standing in front of one of these downed logs, downed trees down in Australia, and it looks that the tree is about 12 feet across at the base. They're going down everywhere, folks, and they don't grow back real fast. Meanwhile, in Africa, illegal exploitations of forests in Tanzania has reached a point of crisis. The illicit activities, some by government officials, placed Tanzania's 33.5 million hectares, about 129,000 square miles of forest and woodland, increasingly at risk. An estimated 500,000 hectares, or about 19,000 square miles of Tanzania's pristine forests, are lost annually. That is almost 20,000 square miles of forest lost annually through illegal timber trade in Tanzania. The illegal trade has been pinpointed in a new publication, Cut and Run, Illegal Logging and Timber Trade in the Tropics, published by Canadian Government's International Development Research Center. Based in Ottawa, the book suggests the Tanzanian government lacks proper mechanisms for forest protection. The government of Prime Minister Frederick Sumaye has now said it will deal with illegal timber merchants severely. Illegal exploitation of forests and corruption in forestry administrations and customs services are also identified in Kenya, Senegal, Ghana, Nigeria, and Cameroon. The Worldwide Fund for Nature has recently determined the ramifications of this wanton deforestation on the country's pristine forests and is to hand over a report to the government. The survey was conducted in Coast Region, where hundreds of logs worth of millions of shillings cut by merchants await collection by the roadside at Nyamwegi Village, Rufiji District. In Tanzania, the book says wildlife populations, including internationally red-listed species, are being decimated by communities of logging employees who have to subsist on bushmeat. Hunting controls are extremely lax. It is said that even the few remaining closed forests in the country also suffer from illegal exploitation and fraudulent practices. That's about it for the news tonight. If you have news announcements, comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send letters, donations, CDs, cassettes, whatever, as long as it's friendly, to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal there at P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Our Earth First Radio is broadcast live from right here, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday night beginning at 8 p.m., or you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer. We're on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's radio for the number four, all.web.net. You'll need a sound card, but the software you need is downloadable from the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations, including Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, right? Free Radio Twin Cities. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis, and in the background is Aeon Blues. Thank you for listening, and please tune in again. And we're going to play a new cut of music here off of Songs of Resistance to the Reroute of 55. This CD is called Trees and Water from Mad Bomb Records. Hey, what could be cooler than that? Here it is.
The will of the people are with me. House. about to reroute at 55. With all your money and all your life, he will never compromise. Even if every last one of us